is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine crisis, along with all the other crises, professional news commentators are exhausted. I learned this from Katrina Vandenhoevel, who is the editor and publishing supervisor of The Nation magazine. We come to celebrate not just news, but also one of the founders of The Nation magazine, a fact that you don't immediately recognize because his name was Frederick Olmsted. Think. Yeah, that's right. Central Park and a lot of other parks. He was a journalist. Katrina, very good evening to you. Journalist, and he helped found The Nation. What was his vision?
Thank you. Thank you, John. I was thinking of him the other day. I was in Central Park. Can you imagine New York City without Central Park? But many cities have his parks, Milwaukee, Springfield, Buffalo, and Prospect Park, of course. But it is a time when one feels despairing. The news is a block of tectonic tumult, not in the right direction in many, many ways. But yes, Olmsted was part of the group of abolitionists who in July 1865 founded The Nation. He founded The Nation, in fact, a few years earlier when he laid out a prospectus for a weekly magazine of reasoned politics and culture, and at the Union League Club, of all places. But he was a journalist. He covered the South in the 1850s before the Civil War for the New York Times. And he wrote for The Nation sporadically, disagreed with its founding editor, E.L. Gotkin, so Olmsted set off and found his great career. But I do begin the column in the Washington Post of a few weeks ago just saying, you know, at this political moment when it seems there's just one outrage after another washing over us, there is a value of the park to seek refuge from the tumult in a park. And I won't go into the medical studies which have documented that if one is in a park, your mental state is a far better one.
Well, strolling through a landscape that is planned to be strolled through is a great treat. You don't, when I first arrived in New York, it was the 1970s. And there was disorder. You can recall that, Katrina, a little disorder, especially on the West Side where I decamped. And Central Park was a dream to walk through it, to cross to the
very
East
beautiful.
Side.
Very beautiful.
Or to walk through it to go down to 59th Street. And it's remained well kept because I believe it has private hands as well as public hands taking care of it.
So let me just say, I mean, parks are also so important to our civic life. I was reminded it was 40 years ago, June 12, 1982, that a million people gathered in Central Park to call for the end of intermediate nuclear range treaty range missiles in Europe. And there have been other moments of, you know, women's marches, other March for Our Lives. So there's a power to these public spaces. And to march in a park or to demonstrate or to sing is a source of peace and solace in addition to inspiration. But New York, I will say I live on Riverside Park, so I don't enjoy the beauty of Central Park as much. But you did raise one thing. There are Central Park, there are private conservancies, and those are to be treasured, but there should be kind of more equitable allocation. You can imagine Central Park is maintained so beautifully because those who live on the park want to preserve it and uplift it. But in any case, there's a lot to do around parks. And Olmsted, great guy, 200th birthday this year, as you noted, John. So I think there's, you know, I think to value things that we take for granted. I remember during the height of COVID, I'm sure you do, John, people just in the park, in the air, in the fresh air, and, you know, not going to restaurants or movies. And there was a sense of just kind of relief and thanks for something that maybe some had taken for granted, though hard to believe.
The fact of it is, Katrina, we have nowhere to run and nowhere to hide. So all you can do is take a few moments of your day to stroll through the park or Riverside Park.
Yes.
Always, you know, we all live together on Riverside Park.
And the river, I will say, is so, you know, it's very beautiful. The Hudson River, also part of our state, our city. But yeah, no, and it's right. He was a designer for this country because he really spread far and wide, which is also kind of a binding packed. I think, you know, parks can be, listen, parks have also been, think of Grant Park, right, in Chicago. I mean, it's where Obama accepted the presidency, but it's also where, you know, in feudal times, 1968, there were very bloody protests. So in general, the park, I think, is something. I just remember the last time, really, the park came alive when it was announced that Biden had won. It was a Saturday because of all the craziness. But, you know, Biden's part of our story right now, too, which is, I think, keeping people
on the edge of their seats.
He's on his way
to the Middle East. And he can't go anywhere these days without knowing that the Ukraine conflict weighs on all of us. We have now the potential cutoff of all energy to Europe. Not only France and Germany, but all of Europe to be cut off. They're searching for energy in North Africa. They're searching for energy anywhere they can find it. At the same time, we have inflation that is a product of the energy in crisis. And we have doubts about leadership worldwide. In fact, Katrina, it feels like our youth, and when all the world leadership could not solve Vietnam. That's what it feels like.
It feels as if there's stasis or stagnation of a kind that is leading to an unwillingness or inability to resolve a crisis that has to end. Brutal war reminds me of, on a larger scale, of the Chechen wars, like 1999. I've been reading about those, but this war has to end. Ukraine has to be reconstructed. And the longer this war goes on and the more NATO spreads, not only in Eastern Europe and Europe, but now to China. And the fact that, John, as I said earlier, the diplomacy appears to be kind of the death of diplomacy. You had the chief diplomat, Antony Blinken, in the same room with the Soviet Russian foreign minister. No contact. There appears to have been no contact for the last 4 or 5 months between the two. And it's as if diplomacy is appeasement. It is not. Tough diplomacy and finding a way out of this war may help with the inflation, with the hunger, the insecurity that is racking the world. So I just do feel there's a crisis of leadership fused with a crisis of geopolitical strategy and outlook.
I want to mention climate, Katrina, because I don't have the science of this. I just have observations. There is an enormous, strange rain in Australia, wintertime.
There is
enormous triple-digit heat in northern Italy, so much so that the Po River has retreated. Hydropower is down, and the crop is damaged. That feeds the tables of Europe. There is triple-digit heat in Pakistan, which we associate with bad summers, but they're out of energy. They don't have an ability to run fans. I could go on around the world.
No. It's also the inability to begin to resolve an existential security problem, which is climate crisis. So this war, which Vladimir Putin, the Russian leader, began, and is being escalated now by weapons coming in from, you know, all places. There's special ops the United States has essentially acknowledged, and that is dangerous because we could sink deeper into it. And the longer this war continues, there is the danger, without being alarmist, of escalation of, you know, the use of tactical nuclear weapons or an accident. And it seems to me that there's too little attention being paid at lower levels even, but certainly at the higher levels of diplomacy, in which you place a trust and a regard for such outcomes, it's not underway.
Katrina Vandenhoevel is the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine.
I tried to end with an upbeat note. I failed.
No, you did, because we're back to Frederick Law Olmsted, one of the founders of The Nation magazine and the author of The Central Park. Everyone enjoy your stroll. I'm John Batchelor.